change your computer passwords often. Most of us are not legally allowed to use a computer, but change them anyway, just in case you suddenly are allowed to use one someday. Also, wear a mask when in public and black out your house number with spray paint. Finally, most identity thefts occur when databases are not securely managed. So my advice? Don't ever end up in a database. This has been Tech News. Coming up after this break, some exclusive clips from my recent 3-hour interview with myself, in which I interrogated myself on my motivations, where I am in life, why I'm not in a different place in life, whose fault that is, and why I said that one embarrassing thing once. 4. Diane had not seen Evan or Dawn at the office for a while. Days, really. Diane rarely talked to Evan. She sometimes talked to Dawn. They were not friends. They liked each other just fine. Dawn worked in marketing. Diane technically worked in marketing, too, but she just ran a database. The database was a list of names. It was also a list of personal details associated with names. It was also a series of personalized photos and histories connected to each name. It was fun to take each life and compact it to a single numerical ID and set of subtables. Because while hugely impersonal and reductive, when combined with tens of thousands of other numerical IDs and their hundreds of thousands of sets of subtables, a database could tell you a lot about how people behave. Sometimes, when she had a little extra time, she often had some extra time at work, Diane would look up information about people in her database. She would do research to find photos or stories or videos about them and index those data in their files. This wasn't necessarily helpful to anyone so much as it was a good way to get to know people. Between her work and raising Josh, she had limited time to make new friends or go on dates. When the marketing department needed data from Diane's database, they could use extremely personal information about their mailings to not only customize a sales pitch to that person, but also to let them know, "We care about you so much that we looked up everything we could find about you in real life." Customers were often so flattered by this gesture that they would send thank you notes like, "How did you find all this out?" Or, "Who are you people?" Or, "I have never told anyone this fact, so how did you know?" Diane's boss, Catherine, read these letters and would sometimes let Diane know how happy everyone was to receive their marketing mailings and what a valuable asset Diane was to their company. Sometimes Diane wanted to ask Catherine what their company actually sold, but she knew it was not her place to ask a question like that. Most people in Night Vale know there is information that is forbidden or unavailable, which is almost all information. Most people in Night Vale get by with a cobbled-together framework of lies and assumptions and conspiracy theories. Diane was like most people. Most people are. Her desk was not in the same set of cubicles as the rest of the staff. Her desk was down the hall next to the server room. Her office outsourced their IT help, so it was just Diane alone near the constant hum of the servers. This was nice because Diane could do personal work or make personal calls when she wanted. She rarely did this, but it was certainly nice to have the freedom to do what you want, when you want, especially if you are not the type to abuse this freedom. Diane was not the type to abuse this freedom. But because her desk was far away from everyone else, she often felt out of the loop. She certainly was invited to participate in regular office activities like low-stakes betting pools on major sporting events, the Super Bowl, the Absurd Bowl, knife ball, poetry, etc. or birthday cake, or going away parties where the existing staffers would take swings at a piñata filled with bees. But she was not part of the normal, casual conversation of office life. She did not discuss the latest news topic each morning. Diane did not experience this camaraderie with her coworkers. She knew Martellus had a baby last year. She knew Tina liked to cross-stitch prayers written in long-forgotten languages. She knew Ricardo distrusted birds. But her interactions were limited by office geography. She could have made an effort over the years to leave her desk and engage with her coworkers, but she had not done this. She was not shy, but maybe lazy socially, not willing to seek out situations and connections that were not already part of her routine. Or maybe she was shy. How does a person discover whether they are shy if they never have the time to meet new people? She worried often about that. Without another parent to provide a different example, Josh would learn only her shyness, and in fact, he seemed to have trouble making and relating to friends. But better, she supposed, that he learn awkwardness from her than learn anything at all from his father. Diane took the job 6 years ago because her job at the counter of Big Rico's Pizza was not making enough money to raise Josh on her own. The company took Diane because they needed someone who understood databases. Diane did not understand databases, but she figures things out quickly, so she lied to get the job. The job market in Night Vale is difficult. What with mysterious hooded figures already doing many tasks. Parking attendant, cartographer, dog watcher. That are more traditionally done in other towns by humans for pay. Like most citizens of Night Vale, Diane found this situation frustrating, but was also gripped with an unspeakable trembling terror that kept her from complaining about it. Her first weeks on the job involved taking her work home and teaching herself database management. This was difficult because she did not yet have a license to turn on her computer at home. Plus, it took her attention away from Josh. Josh had tried to talk to her during those early days of her work. Something about a concert he wanted to go to, and she had told him she was busy and to go away. She needed the job more than she needed Josh to like her. Later, she understood databases, having become the person she lied about being, and could get all of her work done during work hours. When people asked what she did for a living, Diane would say, "I work in an office. What do you do?" And then she would guide interesting conversations about their lives, or she would talk about Josh. Raising Josh was what she did for a living, and the office work just allowed her to do that. Diane never really spoke to Evan at work. She had seen him many times. They had shared comments at birthday and piñata parties like, "Good cake, right?" Or, "Champagne at work, great!" Or, "The sky seemed especially vast and unending this morning." The usual chit-chat. She didn't even notice right away that Evan was not at work. Same with Dawn. But as the days passed, their absence overtook the mundane humdrum of office talk. Some thought Evan and Dawn had run off together. Diane was not comfortable enough with her coworkers to shame them for their gossiping. Some speculated that Evan had left his family, that he had a secret life. Some thought he might just be going through personal issues. Some thought he had died, and no one had caught the body yet. Catherine, the division head, called a meeting to discuss the pair's absence. It was mostly practical, as they had work that needed to get done. Someone offered to drive over to their homes to check on them. Catherine said that would be fine. Diane almost never thought of Evan, but she was thinking of Evan a lot one morning. Evan was thinking of her, too. Diane looked up that morning. Evan stood a few feet from the front of her desk. He was wearing a tan jacket. His belt was a darker brown than his shoes. His hair was recently cut. His face was clean and smooth. He was smiling, silent. He was not smiling like one smiles at a coworker or friend. He was smiling like one smiles for a photo in front of a touristy monument. His teeth were white, or they were almost white. One, his left upper bicuspid, was a little farther forward than any other tooth. His teeth were not white, but they were close. He was looking toward Diane. He was not looking at Diane, but in her vicinity. She could see his pupils. They were not dilated. They were dots. He was looking toward Diane, but his glance seemed to stop just short of where Diane was. He was smiling. Diane said good morning to Evan. Evan turned his head slightly. "It's good to be back," he said. "Where is Dawn?" Diane asked, emphasizing the noun. "Where is Dawn?" Evan asked, emphasizing the verb. His teeth were stained and crooked. "Is everything okay, Evan?" Diane asked. Evan stopped smiling and moved his left foot toward her without putting his weight on it. Diane's phone rang. Evan extended his left arm without bending his elbow. He kept his eyes on the point just in front of Diane. Diane's phone rang. Evan extended his fingers. He bent his right knee still without putting any weight on his left foot. Diane's phone rang. In his fingers was a slip of paper. A small bead of sweat formed along his upper lip. He was not looking at her. Diane's phone rang. Between rings, Diane could hear Evan's belabored breathing. His whole body was vibrating from the muscular strain. Evan set the small slip of paper on the desk. There was writing on it. Diane's phone rang. She grabbed the receiver, interrupting its full ring. "Diane Creighton!" she shouted into the phone. "Hi, Diane. It's me, Evan," said the tinny voice in her ear.
"Evan?"
Evan kept smiling, unspeaking. He released the paper. "I can't make it into work today, Diane," Evan's voice on the phone said. "Can you tell Catherine that I can't make it into work today?"
"Evan?"
Diane repeated. Evan stood up, breathed deeply in through his nose and deeply out through his mouth. "I am not able to come to work today, Diane. Do you understand me?" said the voice on the phone.
"Yes, I think."
Evan smiled again. He looked at Diane. She saw the slip of paper on her desk. She could not read what it said. "Am I being clear, Diane?"
"Evan, I don't know. Where are you? Where are you right now?"
"I can't make it in today." Diane stared at the slip of paper on her desk. Evan looked toward Diane, smiling. Then he turned, no longer looking toward Diane, but likely still smiling. He walked quickly away from her desk, turning the corner and heading down the hall out of sight.
"Evan? Hello?"
"Tell Catherine." "Click," the phone said. Diane hung up. She looked down at the slip of paper on her desk. It was not there. She hurried to Catherine's office. On the way, she saw Dawn.
"Hey, Dawn, where have you been?"
"Hi, Diane. I was homesick for a couple of days. Feeling a lot better, though."
"Good. We were missing you around here. Say, did you see Evan this morning?"
"Who?"
"Evan." Who is Evan?
Evan McIntyre? Works in sales? Sits in that cubicle right there?
Diane turned and pointed in the direction of Evan's cubicle. But instead of a cubicle, there was a fern and an empty chair beneath a framed photo of a cloud. She wasn't sure which cloud it was.
I don't ever remember anyone named Evan ever working here, Dawn said.
Diane looked toward the cloud, not at it, just short of it. Dawn smiled. Her teeth were white.
You okay?
The cloud did not say anything. 5. Jackie ordered coffee. Eventually, coffee was given to her. These moments were related. The moonlight all night was packed, as it always was in the morning. There were few places in town where one could quietly have breakfast in the company of so many other people also quietly having breakfast. There is nothing more lonely than an action taken quietly on your own, and nothing more comforting than doing that same quiet action in parallel with fellow humans doing the same action, everyone alone next to each other. In her right hand was the coffee, served in a mug that said, Jones Brothers Weed Watchers Co. We watch your weeds for suspicious behavior. 24/7 audio and video monitoring. It was part of the Moonlight All Night's charm. They used mugs gathered from any number of sources. Sometimes those sources left strange stains or humming sounds on the mugs. This was also part of the charm. Her left hand clutched the piece of paper, where it had been clutched since yesterday evening. Earlier, she tried burning the paper, but it came back from the ashes. She had placed the paper in a small lockbox, which she locked. It got out. She tried showering the paper away. Taking a shower often solved problems for her. She would find herself with thoughts that seemed to come from outside of her, thoughts that would question decisions or offer suggestions, or just consider life hazily in a way that made it seem like the thoughts could not possibly be her own. When she'd held the paper directly under the stream of the shower, it had turned soggy and dissolved, falling into sludge that crumbled toward the drain. But then, it was back in her hand. Over and over she destroyed it, and over it returned. Finally a dependable companion, she said to the showerhead, and a thought popped into her head that was barely formed into words, more of a general image of how often Jackie is surrounded by things she can depend on, and how little she thinks about them. She left the shower as most people leave showers. Clean, and a little lonely. Sitting in the diner, out of hope for much else, she rolled the paper into a ball and shoved it into her oatmeal, along with the usual blueberries and salt cubes and cured salmon. She downed the entire bowl like she hadn't eaten in days, which might have also been the case. It was hard to tell, as she was hardly able to pay attention to much more than the paper. Her left hand twitched. And without looking down, she knew. Damn it, she said, stabbing the paper with her butter knife, and then repeated, damn it, a couple more times in a hopeless decrescendo. King City, said the paper.
Yeah, so I've heard, she muttered.
No one around her noticed. Teenagers shout things a lot while smashing knives near their hands. Everyone knew. The man on her left was poking the chipped countertop and whispering to it. His straw hat was set very far back on his head, so that his face seemed longer than it should be. On her right was a woman who had set her chair so it was facing the door to the diner and was making a check mark on her clipboard every time someone walked in. All in all, no one cared about a young woman shouting and jabbing at her hand. Coffee at the Moonlight in the morning was part of her usual routine. In about 5 minutes, she would put down whatever remained of the coffee, whisper into her water glass for the check, pull it out from under the tray of sugar packets where it would suddenly be, then place it along with some cash back under the sugars, wait for the sound of swallowing to indicate the bill was paid, and then leave the restaurant. The typical diner rigmarole. Then she would drive to the pawn shop, dig up the doors from where they were hidden, and replace them, unlocked, at the front, just in time for opening time, which was the moment her gut told her the shop should be open. She would sit there all day, doing what she did and no more than what she did, and then she would stop doing that and go home. There wasn't much else to it. Life. A person's life is only what they do. But this morning, she did not ask for the check. She did not pay it or leave. She stared at the paper in her hand and knew that she would not do any of the things she normally did this day. This knowledge came as a pain in her stomach and a fluttering on her neck. It was physical, this knowledge, as a strong knowing always is. It had more to do with an ache in her bones than a notion in her head. The paper had disrupted her routine, and her routine was her life. Without it, she was just a teenager who did not age and had no friends. She felt helpless before the paper's power, even as she did not understand what that power was. "Fine," she shouted at it. "Okay," shouted a man in a nearby booth at a stain on his tie. In the kitchen, another man in a floral apron and a hairnet nodded at a tub of soaking dishes. "Yup," he said. People often found themselves assenting to inanimate objects in the moonlight all night. Jackie sat back on the cracked red stool that smelled of rubber and sawdust. She needed a plan. She turned to the man on her left. "I need a plan," she said. "What was that?" He looked up. His forehead was long and unwrinkled, and he appeared to be wearing a great deal of makeup. "A plan, dude! I need my life back the way it was!" She shook the paper in frantic demonstration. "Okay, kid." He flicked his eyes back to the counter where he had been staring. "I need the man in the tan jacket!" The man next to her narrowed his eyes. He presumably had two eyes. "What was that you were just saying?" he said. "I need to find someone else who saw him. There must be somebody in this town who talked to him and can tell me about him." He stared at her with what was probably a normal amount of eyes. "I'll need to start talking to people all over town. Try to find anyone who knows him. Listen carefully to what they say and what they don't say." "Did you just mention a man in a tan jacket?" he asked. "Doesn't matter," she said, turning back to the front and reestablishing the wall between her and her fellow customers eating at a diner counter, or the eighth wall, as it is known in the world of theater. She decided to make a list of everyone who might know about this mysterious man. She pulled out the pen she used for writing tickets at the pawn shop. It was a promotional pen from a festival put on by the city a few years ago. The Night Vale Shakespeare in a Pit Festival. "Fall into the Bard's Words," it said. The broken leg had been painful, but she did love the pen. She searched her pockets for anything to write on and could find nothing. The blank tickets were kept at the pawn shop, and anyway, they were only for writing claim tickets. There was a way things are done. Although that moment, they were not being done. Her existence was premised on everything being the same, every day, and the paper was insistently different. It was impossible to sink into a blissful holding pattern with a mysterious paper in her hand. There were no menus or placemats to write on, and then she looked down at her left hand and the paper.
Of course.
She put the paper on the counter, wrote list at the top of the blank side. Or at least, list was what she intended to write. Instead, she wrote King City.
No, she said to her own hand.
She crossed out what she had written and wrote list. Except that it still looked a lot like King City.
No,
she said again. She would not accept it. Not this, too. Maybe it was the surface. She pushed the paper aside, where it immediately sprang back, the marks from the pen completely gone, into her left hand, and wrote directly on the counter.
Hey, said Laura, the waitress, as she walked by. I'll have to clean that later.
Laura had many branches growing from her body, laden with fruit. Test, Jackie wrote on the counter, and again it came out as King City. She yelled in frustration. The man with the long forehead and the woman with the clipboard glared at her. Teenagers don't usually write things while yelling, they thought, worried. Said a voice from under the man's hat. Even if she did go to the pawn shop, she wouldn't be able to write tickets for the customers, or price tags that said $11. She felt utterly defeated, and this feeling made her angry and defiant. What had she done to deserve this? She punched the counter, and then held her aching fist. Her phone rang. She pulled it out, and the woman next to her slipped in an earpiece so she could listen along. Hello, Mom?
Hello, dear.
Her mom didn't quite grasp that phones bridged the distance between people, so shouting was unnecessary.
I'm sorry, Mom. I'm busy at work right now.
The woman with the clipboard, one hand on the earpiece, raised an eyebrow at her, and Jackie waved it off.
Do you need something? I can't just call my child. I have to need something. Of course you can, Mom. That's not what I...
But now that you mention it... See? Jackie mouthed to the woman with the clipboard. The woman shrugged.
What is it, Mom?
I need to talk to you.
I'm glad we could talk then. Was there anything else?
Jackie wrote King City on the counter again and cringed.
No, I need to talk to you in person. It's important. I have something to tell you. It's about... Well, it's better if you just come and we can talk about it.
Jackie's eyes burned. She wasn't sure if it was an allergic reaction. She couldn't remember ever feeling this sensation. She touched the corner of her eye. It was wet. There was water coming from her eyes and trickling down her cheeks, and she knew she was crying, but she wasn't sure if she had ever cried before. She let all the air that was in her out, without using her mouth to make that air communicate anything. This lack of communication communicated a great deal.
Jackie, are you there? Yes, I'm wherever I am. Here I am. Mom, have I ever... I mean, do you ever remember a time when I...
She looked up and froze without actually stopping movement. The freezing happened inside. One of the cooks was staring at her. He was tall and blonde. His smile was wide and warm, and it unnerved her. He was flipping burgers. Who was ordering burgers this early in the morning? But he wasn't taking his eyes off of her. So the burgers were landing on the floor, in the sink, on the edge of the griddle, in a haphazard splash pattern starting from where his spatula tossed them. His smile was so wide and so warm. Jackie didn't feel safe.
Jackie, come on over. I think this is a good time to tell you.
Okay, Mom.
Okay, I'll be there. I just have a few things I need to do first.
She shut off the phone, and her mom was gone. She would need to start somewhere. Old Woman Josie had mentioned that the angels wanted to see her, and even though no one could legally acknowledge their existence, they did tend to know what more legally existent creatures did not. It was, if nothing else, somewhere to start at. She got up to leave, glancing back to the kitchen. The cook was still staring at her, a burger in mid-flip. Her quick glance did not take in its landing, and so, in her mind, it was always in the air, tumbling, never landing, never consumed, only spinning and falling, spinning and falling. 6. Catherine's office had 2 plants, 3 chairs, 2 desks, 1 hutch, 6 personal photos in standing frames, 1 of those cliched motivational posters on the wall that had 2 crows tearing out the insides of a reasonably sized forest cat with the cheesy inspirational caption, "Unremittingly, you must stare into the sun," and a clay paperweight, most likely made by Catherine's daughter. It was signed, "By Your Seed," in adorable small child handwriting. Diane sat in one of the chairs that had no wheels. The other 2 chairs were empty. The computer was humming and glowing. Flashes of colorful dots disappeared and reappeared on the screen. A phone was ringing somewhere in the cubicle area. A phone was being answered in the cubicle area. A tarantula inched between the keyboard and mouse, as if it were playing the game where it can only move 1 leg at a time, which is a popular game with tarantulas. Tarantulas are simple creatures, Diane's house thought, but no one was home to receive that thought. Josh was at school, not thinking about tarantulas. Diane was in the office, trying not to think about Josh. The door opened and Catherine said, "Sorry about making you wait so long," but she said it in a way that a person says, "Sorry about the loss of your pet." Catherine was either expertly empathetic or completely disingenuous. It depended on what you needed a boss to be. In this way, Catherine was a good boss. Catherine sat down in the chair that had wheels and was between the 2 desks. She shoved papers and their paperweight out from the center of the desk, creating a small, clean triangle of oak desktop between her and Diane. "How's Josh?" Catherine asked. "Josh?" Diane was not expecting small talk, nor did she expect Catherine to remember her son's name. She had always gotten along fine with her boss, but they had spoken only once or twice in her entire time with the company. Catherine had always seemed fair and kind, as things go, but also stressed and distracted. "Josh, right? Your son? How is he? Still taking different physical forms all the time?" "Oh, he's fine, just fine." "That's unspecific, but I will not press you for more if you do not wish to mix work and home lives," Catherine said without moving her neck or eyes. "I legitimately am interested in Josh. I met him a couple of years ago when we saw each other at the Ralphs. You were looking at different cereal packages, and Josh that day had, oh, I remember, such long fingers and ears, big dark eyes and beautiful black wings. He was a handsome boy." "Yes, he is a handsome boy. And I was buying metal cleaner and a 32-pack of meat thermometers. I remember that day well." Catherine frowned, her eyes briefly sad before she was able to compose her face back to neutral. "How is he doing at school? He must be 15 now. Is he dating yet?"
"I think maybe he has an interest."
"You don't have to answer that if you do not wish." Catherine raised 1 hand in the air, fingers together, palm facing Diane. Diane looked at Catherine's forceful but caring gesture and then up a bit along her arm. The tarantula, which had been near the computer earlier, was now on Catherine's shoulder. It had 1 leg in the air, pointing toward Diane. It was possible that the creature was still walking slowly, but Diane hoped it was instead mimicking its owner's arm gesture. Imagining this, Diane smiled a small smile. Catherine smiled a small smile in unconscious response. Catherine had no idea the tarantula was there. She was, in fact, terrified of spiders. She couldn't even look at a photo of one without panicking or possibly passing out. Diane misunderstood the situation. Catherine thought she was connecting to an employee on an emotional level. Catherine also misunderstood the situation.
"Oh, no, it's fine," Diane said. "He's 15. You know how it is. He doesn't talk too much about what kids he likes."
"That's probably for the best. It's tough to talk with parents about romance and sex and dating. I remember being that age. I remember being almost all of the ages I have been."
The tarantula had turned and was crawling down Catherine's upper arm. Diane thought it would be nice to have a pet at the office, like goldfish. Could she take care of goldfish at her desk? They make a lot of noise. And you have to feed them mice every week, Diane thought. Maybe not.
"Tell me what I can help you with, Diane," Catherine said. "I wanted to talk to you about Evan, about what happened last week with Evan and Dawn being absent."
"Right. Your insistence that someone named Evan worked here."
Catherine tilted her head.
"Well, about the misunderstanding we had about Evan."
Catherine did nothing.
"It was a..."
Diane weighed the difference between accepting blame for an action and claiming that action. On the one hand, she could protect her job, her reputation. On the other hand, she could act based on what she understood to be a reality, that a man named Evan used to work in her office. She had gotten in some arguments with her coworkers in both HR and finance over this issue. She wanted Catherine to help resolve it, but she also knew her insistence was beginning to reflect poorly on her. Diane's head pulsed with what wasn't quite a headache. It sounded like her own voice was different, or like it belonged to someone else. She also considered that in the place where she thought Evan's desk was, there was no desk at all. Maybe her coworkers were right. She began to sell herself on the idea that she must have lost her mind, or a part of her mind, for a moment. That perhaps she should see a doctor. Like most people in Night Vale, she wasn't sure what doctors did exactly, but it was rumored that there were benefits to their secretive activities. Diane had many thoughts in a breath-long conversational hesitation. The tarantula didn't even have time to take a step.
"A mistake," Diane continued, the pause almost indistinguishable from a stutter. "I don't know how I thought there was a man named,
And for a flicker, she did not remember anything about the man, let alone his name.
"Evan,"
she recovered, "who worked here."
"I understand," said Catherine.
"But I'm curious. Was there ever an employee by that name or a similar name? Was I close? Was I maybe conflating this person with someone else? I'm just trying to not feel crazy, you know?"
Diane laughed. Catherine did not laugh.
"Not off the top of my head, no. I will look and I will let you know. There used to be an Alan, I think, who was a sales associate."
"Oh, I remember Alan. No, not him."
"It will be difficult to help if you create a culture of no, Diane."
They both laughed at this. It was an excellent dry joke, Catherine thought.
"I am connecting with people," Catherine thought.
What in the hell? Diane thought.
"Seriously, I will look into it, Diane. I am glad Dawn is back and that we have our full staff together again."
"Yes, I was... Well, I don't know if you were... But it was stressing me out, not knowing."
"Not knowing?" The tarantula was stepping off the back of Catherine's elbow, trying to reach the armrest. You held a staff meeting where we discussed Dawn and Dawn's absence. That she was missing for a few days and no one could get hold of her. We offered to drive to her house and... When was this? Catherine swiveled her chair around to her computer and jerked the mouse back and forth in three equal swipes. The colorful dots and darkness faded, and Catherine clicked on her calendar. The tarantula retracted its exploratory leg. Tuesday. Time? Morning, I think. I think it was a morning. There's nothing on my calendar that morning. We had an operations meeting that afternoon, but you wouldn't have been at that. Nothing in the days around Tuesday. We had a staff meeting on Thursday, but Dawn was back that day. Dawn was only gone 4 days. She had been calling in sick each day, Diane. Catherine turned back from her computer. The tarantula, still on her arm, turned with her. Have you talked to Dawn? She said. Yes. No. Not in detail. You should talk to Dawn. I will. I definitely will. Diane, you should also give yourself some time off. I want a healthy staff, a happy staff. I want you to take care of your migraines. Diane had never had migraines and wasn't sure what Catherine was talking about. She thought that perhaps it was a different day than she thought it was, or that Catherine was not her boss, but another person wearing a mask. Nothing seemed right. I will. I'll take care of them. And I'll talk to Dawn. Wonderful. Catherine turned her chair back toward Diane again. And Diane? Diane, standing to leave, paused. Thank you. No, thank you, Catherine. Thanks for being patient. I was confused. You are welcome. Catherine's fingers were together again, fitting neatly into the cleared triangle of her desk. The tarantula had reached the armrest and was just dragging its brown bulk onto the desk. It pulled itself next to a photo of a young Catherine and a younger boy. Catherine, can I ask an unrelated question? Anytime, Diane. What is her name? Diane asked, pointing to the spider. Whose name? Or his? I apologize. I shouldn't assume gender. Ah, of course. This is a he, Catherine said with a rigid smile, reaching her hand out in the direction of the tarantula. The tarantula stopped. It seemed to stare at Catherine's hand. Or it could have just sensed motion above it and frozen. Tarantulas are simple creatures, Diane thought, not knowing where the thought came from. Catherine's hand wrapped around the side of the picture of her and the boy. The tarantula brushed one leg against Catherine's middle finger. She felt it, but did not know what the feeling was, and thus, like most things she does not understand, she ignored it. This is a photo of me with my son, Kim. It took Diane a moment to connect her mental narrative with the visible reality. But when she processed that Catherine was talking about the photo of the boy and not the tarantula, she understood clearly. I understand clearly, Diane said. What a weird response. He's beautiful, I meant you are both beautiful in that photo. We were younger in that photo. There are other photos where we are older. Time, Diane guffawed. Catherine reciprocated. Right? What is time, even? Catherine took her hand away from the photo frame. The tarantula set its foot back on the desk. Diane completed her movement to stand up. Go talk to Dawn. I will. Catherine turned back to her computer knowing she had reports to write. Diane left Catherine's office knowing she needed to talk to Dawn. The tarantula stared at the ceiling, not knowing at all what a ceiling is. The Voice of Night Vale. Which implied a lot while saying little. Indeed, the same could be said for the rest of the planets in our solar system. None of them commented. Our town is once again facing a serious tarantula problem. The Nightvale Unified School District indicated that fewer than 1 in 5 tarantulas graduate from high school. Indeed, most spiders never even enroll in public education, choosing to instead spin webs and eat smaller insects. Tarantulas are simple creatures, thought PTA Treasurer Diane Creighton today, without ever voicing that sentence aloud to anyone, according to several reliable and invasive spy satellites that were scanning her brain at the time. We reached out to the tarantula community for a response to Diane's privately held opinion, and were immediately crawled upon by several of them. I think they are gone, but I am feeling a vague tickling on my back that I am afraid to investigate. Maybe I'm developing migraines. I should ask Carlos about that. Listeners, the sheriff's secret police are out in large numbers tonight in Nightvale. They're not looking for a killer or a missing person. There was no disaster or accident to handle. They're simply wandering around town in large numbers. Some of these police are working, sitting in patrol cars, waiting for minor traffic infractions or calls to duty. Some of these police are not working. They are out to dinner with their families, or watching a popular sporting event on a bar television with friends. Some are reading books or catching up on television shows. Some are working late in a secret precinct office, probably hidden in that heavy-looking, unmoving cloud. The secret police are out in large numbers tonight. Nearly every member of the secret police is somewhere in Nightvale. They all exist. We feel very safe. More news next, but first a brief word from our sponsors. Pepsi. A refreshing drink. A soft tone playing when you wake up. But then it is gone, and you don't know if you dreamed it. A hallway glimpsed in the back of your refrigerator. But when you look again, it is gone. The recurring feeling that your shower is losing faith in you. Desperation. Hunger. Starving. Not literally, but still. That hallway again, lined with doors that you know you can open. Your fridge is empty. You haven't left your home in days, and yet you come and go. This isn't food. What are you eating? Pepsi. Drink Coke. The City Council had their third press conference in as many hours to reiterate the extreme dangers posed by angels. There is no such thing as an angel, said the council in their unified many voice. But if there were, what a dangerous and disgusting creature it would be. Think of its many legs and its ghastly voice. Think of an angel as a murderer hiding in your home. Think of an angel as the very concept of meaningless injury and death. You'll have to imagine all this because angels do not exist. Stay away from them, they concluded. We now return you to the sound of whatever is around you, which is probably a great deal more sound than you think, only some of which indicates future harm for you. 7. Old Woman Josie would come first. Jackie could visit her mother later. Josie's house was near the edge of town, next to the used car lot. When a person was done with a car and they didn't need to pawn it, they would park it in the used car lot, open the door, and run as fast as they could for the fence, before the used car salesman could catch them. No one ever came to buy one. The used car salesmen loped between the lines of cars, their hackles raised and their fur on end. They would stroke the hood of a Toyota Sienna, radiant with heat in the desert sun, or poke curiously at the bumper of a Volkswagen Golf, nearly dislodged by potholes and tied on with a few zip ties. The used car salesmen were fast and ravenous, and sometimes a person who meant only to leave their car would leave much more than that. Jackie parked her car down the street to avoid any confusion with the salesman. Her stomach hurt, not like she had eaten something bad, but like she had done something bad. It was a stabbing pain on her right side. Maybe her appendix had burst. That's a thing, right? Jackie was not at work. She had left her routines fully. In her hand was a paper. In her mind were vague memories of a man with a tan jacket holding a deer-skin suitcase. She approached the house. It was a low bungalow, avocado green, with a neat lawn kept well-watered in the dry climate at the expense of some other place far away and out of mind. The lawn was surrounded by a border of pebbles, arranged into geometric patterns that were perhaps meant to ward away evil, or might have just been the way earthquakes had left them. The fence between the house and the car lot was tall and chain-link. A used car salesman howled, hopping from car roof to car roof with an animal joy. Jackie creaked open the metal gate into Josie's side yard. With an outdoor sitting area made of rusted metal rocking chairs with cushions whose fabric was faded nearly all the way to white by the sun.
"Can I help you?"
She turned. There was a being that was difficult to describe, although the best and most illegal description was angel. Angels are tall, genderless beings who are all named Erica.
"I was just doing some trimming," the being said.
They were holding hedge trimmers and standing by an empty patch of dirt. There were no plants of any kind anywhere near them.
"I'm looking for old woman Josie," Jackie said.
The being shifted. There was the crack of heavy wings flapping, and a flash of a blinding bright blackness, a darkness so radiant it seemed to Jackie her heart would break.
"Josie?" the being said. "Sure, she's around. Let me go get her."
They didn't move.
Okay. Thanks, man," Jackie said.
The being still did not move.
"I'll just knock then."
"No need," said Josie. "Erica got me." She was walking in from the backyard, hunched over a cane, her long hair in strings over her face. But there was something about her body that seemed powerful, like an Olympic athlete perched on an old woman's skeleton.
"Great," Jackie said. "Thanks, Erica."
The being still did not move. A flock of birds took off from a tree on the street, bird after bird, more birds than could possibly fit in a tree. They seemed confused, cawing and flying into each other.
"What can I do for you today, young Jackie Fierro?" said Josie. "Finally taking a day off and enjoying yourself?"
"Nah, just wanted to ask you about some stuff."
More pain. Maybe her appendix really had burst. Maybe she would die.
"I have a problem. Thought maybe somebody else might be having it too."
"Almost always we are all experiencing the same problems as everyone else," said Josie, "and pretending we don't so that every one of us thinks we are alone. Come on inside." She hobbled over to the front door. Under her arm was a cloth-wrapped bundle with dirt clinging to it. As they entered the cool of the house, she set it on the kitchen counter and led Jackie into the living room.
"Take any seat you'd like in there," she said. "They're all the most plush thing your butt will ever experience."
Jackie chose an overstuffed easy chair with a paisley design.
"Wow," she said, settling back and back into fabric that continued to give.
For a moment, the pain vanished. Comfort was the answer to all life's problems. It didn't solve them, but it made them more distant for a bit, as they quietly worsened.
"You wanted to ask me a question?"
said Josie, who had put herself on the couch with a good view of the bundle on the kitchen counter. She seemed to be counting under her breath, keeping time with the tapping foot.
"Yes. What do you know about a man in a..." "Ah, hold on, dear."
A different being, just as difficult to describe as the one outside, was bringing in coffee and a plate of Oreos.
"The only thing for company, of course, coffee and Oreos. Would you like any?"
Josie asked.
"No, thanks."
"No?" Josie frowned. The being may have frowned too. It was difficult to tell and, of course, impossible to describe.
"Well, sure then."
"Sure then?" Josie shook her head. "No, no. If you don't want the coffee and Oreos, then you don't take the coffee and the Oreos. Please take it away, Erica." The being was gone. Presumably, they walked away. Jackie must have just missed them walking away. Josie glared at the bundle on the counter.
"Don't you dare," she said.
"Don't I dare what?"
"I wasn't talking to you. Tell me your question."
"Josie, do you know anything about a man in a tan jacket holding a deerskin suitcase?"
"The man in the tan jacket?"
Josie's voice took on a new tone, one filled with interest and perhaps panic. Erica was back, both of the Ericas. They sat on either side of Josie on the couch. Their faces were similar to the ones that a human uses to express fear. No, not fear. Concern. They looked concerned.
"Yes," Jackie said. "A man in a tan jacket, holding a deerskin suitcase."
The angel's eyes flared, which was an action as odd to witness as it is difficult to picture.
"Oh, my dear," said Josie. "I don't know if you should be asking about all that. Are you sure you wouldn't rather have some Oreos?"
"I wouldn't, no."
"Fair," Josie said. "Then we'll talk about a man in a tan jacket holding a deerskin suitcase."
She clutched her left hand against her side like she had a pain there, but no pain registered in her face.
"We don't know anything about him," Josie continued. "Not Erica, nor Erica. Of course, Erica never really knows anything about anything, but Erica's a sweet one, so..."
"Do you know about him or not?"
"We know about him. We just don't know anything about him. We are aware that he exists, so there's that much. But his existence is the limit of it, the knowledge."
"Knowledge is made of limits," said Erica, the one who never really knows anything about anything.
"That's cool," said Jackie. She did not mean it, and she said it in a way that let them all know she did not mean it.
"Yes, it's pretty cool," said Erica, the sweet one, meaning it completely.
"Here is what it is," said Josie. "We have seen the man you were talking about many times, but we can never remember anything about him."
The Ericas nodded sadly.
"We were not even aware he was a man," said the Erica who was not sweet. "We cannot see gender."
This was not why they were sad. Their sadness was unrelated to the conversation. It was not unrelated to the dirt-covered bundle on the kitchen counter.
"Had the same problem," said Jackie. "Kept forgetting everything I knew about him moments after I started knowing it."
"It? I don't know." She struggled to find a combination of words that would encompass how deeply the last 12 hours had unsettled her. She knew how she felt. She just needed to describe it in words.
"It sucks," she said instead.
"Yes. Yes, it does suck," said Josie. Her face was limp, and her mouth kept forming a smile only to lose it. This was related to the conversation. She reached across and placed her hand on Jackie's.
"Erica?
Erica?
Can we have a moment alone?"
The two beings were no longer on the couch. Through the window, Jackie could see one of them plucking absently at a tangle of blackberries,
although their head was turned slightly back toward Jackie, presumably trying to hear.
Jackie, there are things that I cannot tell you.
Josie's hand was still upon Jackie's. Josie's other hand was clenched at her side.